Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 206 of the SoxProspects.com podcast. We are the web's number one source for information on the Boston Red Sox farm system from top to bottom, from Fort Myers to Worcester, up the Pike to Fenway, and all stops in between. Thank you for listening. My name is Chris Hatfield. I am the executive editor of SoxProspects.com, and I am joined, as always, by our director of scouting, who I recently had the absolute horror of learning that he eats his pancakes dry.
Yeah.
Ian Kundle.
Yeah, Ian, maple syrup is overrated.
You are a monster and need to be stopped.
Sorry for having good taste. I'm sure this is a controversial take, but I stand by it.
How long have you eaten your pancakes dry? Like, just always?
Well, you can't say that because I don't eat, like, pancake, like, normal pancakes dry. Like, they have to be, like, blueberry or something interesting, but...
Okay, that helps.
My entire life, I've never liked maple syrup, really.
Do you put more fruit on it or just in the pancake?
No, in the pancake.
Just in. Okay, well, I mean, you can put them on top, too. I mean...
Yeah, no.
Like, you're not going to put strawberries in the pancake, but sometimes I'll throw strawberries
on top. I've done that before, too, but, okay. I don't know.
Pancakes.
Yeah.
Have you ever had Eggos?
No.
No, okay. I mean, they're not good, but... Fair. All right. Well, anyway, I just don't even... I'm gonna try and get through this episode of the podcast.
Do you know why we'll get through? Baseball starts tomorrow.
That's damn right. Tomorrow is opening day. We're recording this on March the 31st. This will probably go up on April 1. This is no April Fool's joke, but we are here with a season opening preview, at least of the Major League season. We're going to focus on the Major League club and how prospects in the system could impact the Major League club this year over the course of a full year, normal size rosters. We're going to talk about the COVID scare the Red Sox had over the past week. We're going to talk about the roster, and we're going to talk about a rankings update that happened recently. We did some tweaks to the rankings. We moved a few players around. We'll talk about why we did that, our thoughts thereon, and such and so forth. And, of course, we're going to get to your emails. As always, we want to talk about what you want to hear about. Send us your emails at podcast@soxprospects.com. Again, podcast@soxprospects.com. Send them in. And, of course, as always, if you want to support the podcast, you can support us at patreon.com/soxprospects. And, as always, we want to shout out our $5 level Patreon supporters. That ever-growing list is Kyle Costigan, Tyler Woodrall, Jeff Traynor, David Nardone, Tim Harding, Bill Stanton, Deb Kendall, Evan Kirkwood, Hurricanes 1, Chris Fox, James O'Hara, Nathan Kenyon, Andrew Wallen, David B., Ben Burnett, Al Mendel, Kevin Catrides, Ben NRI, Paul Denyer, Lendl Martin, Cassandra Buchta, James P. McMahon, Stephen Gregory, James Bailey, Andreas Goldstrand, Corey Perrick, Forrest Perkins, Mark Herman, Aaron Mehta, Jeff Harwood, Jimmy Mountain, Brian Cowan, and Dusty G. Ian, let's jump right into it. Let's actually start with kind of the big news since our last episode. Two things happened. One, which as I was listening back to some of our prior episode, was... hold on, let me shut this door. Doggo's standing right there. You coming in, Doggo? Do you want to be on the podcast? No, she's just standing on the stairs. All right. Well, anyway, since the last episode, I started listening back to it, and we're talking about the construction of the roster, who's going to get the last spot in the bullpen, etc. And then it comes out that Matt Barnes has COVID. And he's going to be on the IL. And there are 8 people in contact tracing protocols, including Matt Andreese.
Wasn't Whitlock another one?
Well, what I was going to say, and I'm being measured in how I say this, but I had to figure out, because no one else was, who the other guys were, because Cora was basically like, I'm not going to tell you who they are, but you're going to be able to figure it out, which is not even true because there's like 3 beat reporters in Fort Myers. It's like Peter Abraham, Rob Bradford, because he was doing like the radio broadcasts,
and Ian Brown.
I think it was those 3. And he's like, you're going to notice. Who's going to notice? What do you mean we're going to notice? No one's there, Alex. But you could just tell by like when he gave what the lineups were going to be in the pitching and stuff like that, there was a list of 5 guys. It included Kevin Plawecki and Nick Pivetta, but they were like working in B games. So that eliminated them. And it became clear that, it was Garrett Whitlock and, Garrett Richards, the Garretts. were the two who were also in contact tracing protocols, and probably some coaches or other people, which would have been pretty brutal to start the year without Barnes, Whitlock, Andrisi, and Richards.
Well, especially because, as we'll probably talk about in a little bit, right. Tanner Houck looks like he's going to have to take Eduardo Rodriguez's spot in the rotation.
The first time through, at least.
The first time through. So that was the clear guy. If something happened to those guys, you call up to provide depth out of the bullpen. But if he's off having to start, then it's like it throws everything off even more.
Right. Well, because what I was going to say is that I think this is new since the last episode, too, that Eduardo Rodriguez has dead arm.
Oh, right, the dead arm,
Which, it's kind of funny. Someone in our forum looked it up, and apparently that's actually a medical term having to do with, like, a labrum tear.
But oh, I had a dead arm back in high school before. Okay. It's brutal.
Well, apparently, like, the way the Red Sox appear to be using it here, and the way that I always thought of it, it just means, like, a tired arm. I don't think they actually mean he's got a labrum tear.
Well, I did have a labrum tear.
No, I'm not saying, you didn't. I believe you.
I feel like it's kind of turned into a euphemism for his stuff wasn't as good as he thought it was, and his arm felt weird, but there's nothing structurally wrong with it, so we just call it dead arm.
Fatigue. Yeah, like fatigue, like essentially. You're like ramping up fatigue in spring training here, which makes perfect sense. Like, I'm not too worried about it, but, you know, so basically what was happening was what happened to them last year, was one way of thinking about it. And this is what really stood out to me, was that they were about to lose, entering the year, their number one starter, their number three starter, their number six and seven starters / long relievers, and either their closer or their eighth inning guy. And just to show you how much better situated this team was, it looked like the rotation entering the year was going to be like Eovaldi on the opener, Houck in game two, Pivetta in game three.
Yeah.
Perez in game four, and then you could throw Eovaldi in game five. You would have needed someone for game six, and you would have been hoping that, like, either Rodriguez was ready or one of the contact tracing guys was cleared, or you know, maybe it winds up being like a Connor Siebold, right? Just give him his first start. The fact that they were able to deal with that so easily was striking to me.
Well, I think it goes back to kind of what we talked about, where they've done a really good job of bringing in pitching depth. And if you look like last year, they had less injuries than this, and they were in way worse shape right off the bat.
I don't know that I would say they had fewer injuries last year, because
I'm saying at the start of the season, though, like, it was just Sale and Erod, right? It was just
because it was all the COVID guys right off the bat.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, they lost the COVID guys, so it was Darwinson and Taylor were gone. So I guess it was those four, but that was like your ace, your number three.
But I guess the point I was trying to make is, like, the guys that would have replaced them last year are not even in consideration this year. In fact, none of them are even on the 40 man, I don't think. Like,
well, it was Hall and Springs. That's what I said. Last year they had to call up Hall and Springs. This year they're calling up Tanner Houck and
guys like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Weber was already starting the year in the rotation because he was replacing Price.
Oh yeah, forgot that. Jeez.
Because that was the like, let's throw the spaghetti against the wall for the fifth starter spot.
Dark times.
See what happens. Yeah.
But at least on good news, or what's it called? It might be dark times, but at least it ended up with them getting the fourth pick in what is looking like a loaded draft.
True.
Which we'll talk about.
Yeah, we're gonna have to talk about that. We actually have questions about that in the email inbox.
Okay, cool. So we'll touch on the draft.
We'll touch on the draft there.
Update on the performances.
Yeah, but it's. It was just striking to me how much better equipped they are to deal with it this year. And then it turns out that, like, what did they say Barnes had? He had a non-contagious case,
a non-infectious, which either means that it was a false positive, or he's had it before and it was just remnants of that past, like,
right.
positive.
Because, well, I guess what he said is he took, like, a bunch of tests in the next few days and they all came back negative. Which that would imply to me a false positive, but no one's saying false positive. I don't know whether it's because they can't or something. But at any rate, yeah, everybody's cleared. Everybody's back. It looks like Richards can take his turn in the rotation, and that Andrisi and Whitlock will be ready to start the year. Rodriguez, it sounds like they're going to have him hopefully ready for the second turn, but we'll see. He can go on IL and pitch like the eighth game or so. I don't even think it's that. I think it's even sooner. So he could basically, it looks like Hauk, if everything goes perfectly, Hauk makes one start. And maybe that's a good transition, Ian, into talking about Hauk's last start that he made in spring training, because what happened, in spring training was when this came down, they had AJ Politi make a spot start.
Yeah, and Josh Winkowski did.
Josh Winkowski made a spot start, which
Politi looked kind of good.
Politi looked, he looked like a guy who'd never pitched above high A.
Yeah, Winkowski looked pretty good, though.
Winkowski looked pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, he's interesting.
So he you know, that was a bit of an eye-opener. And then the last spot start, which was clearly the first one that they could really plan for, was Tanner Houck, and he came out. I don't have the numbers in front of me even, but I want to say four or five.
It's like four and a third, six strikeouts, one hit, like one walk or something. I'll bring it up right now while you talk.
Yeah, but I mean, he came out and we got good Tanner Houck, which if you were paying attention last year, this should not be a surprise to you. It, of course, also brought out all of the takes that how is this guy starting in the minor leagues? Like he didn't have two really bad appearances out of his first three. Like, were you guys not watching?
He had one good, one bad.
And it's like, the reason he's not is because he's still yo-yoing, and because of the fact he needs to develop the third pitch. And everyone's like, well, he can do that in the majors. Okay, he made three starts last year at the end of a season where there was no pressure and there was no stakes at all. There were no stakes at all in those games. And he didn't throw the splitter at all. So why is he going to throw it now in games that, in theory, count, because you're back at, you know, everyone starts 0-0. These games count more. They matter more because you're still, in theory, trying to chase a playoff berth. Why would he work on the third pitch? He's not. Why is he going to work on commanding the four-seam fastball, which was a problem last year, by the way? You know, it's not like he's going to come out and be a Cy Young candidate. I have no problem with him being the spot starter. None at all. The fact that he's getting the second start of the year, terrific. Glad they've got him. That's exactly why he's there. He's going to get more than 10 starts this year, I think. I feel very confident saying that. Over the course of a 162-game season, no question he gets 10 in my
mind. But I think that that's not, say, projecting an injury either. That's just because the number of innings they have to make up from last year is going to require getting creative, as we've talked about. It's going to require going six-man rotation at times if there's double headers. It's going to require just like weird scheduling. And so I think it's fine if he ends up being someone that makes those 10 starts, because if he is, that means they're comfortable with him out there.
Yeah, it means he's doing what he's supposed to be doing. That's the plan. And I know we talk about Andreese and Whitlock. I think those are guys you slot in, A, after guys who need to come out after three because they've hit a pitch count, or after four, so you don't stretch your bullpen. They're guys who you slot in. Maybe it's a doubleheader. Maybe it's you've got a 13-game stretch with no breaks. You throw them in on game six. You know, things like that. When someone goes down is primarily when Hauck might come up. And you can kind of gimmick it with Locke and Andreese to get to his pitch day or something. But he's, like I said, I think he's going to get at least 10 starts this year. So he'll be up, even though he's not starting in the majors. You're going to see a lot of Tanner Houck this year. But yeah, I mean, he looked great in his last start. I love it. Good. Let's go. I look forward to seeing what he does in game two against the Orioles.
Well, I think though the takeaway is I talked to a scout who's at that game, and still you got to like his control was much better, but his command was still. Like he was getting away with like sloppy fastballs, and he's going to do that. I don't think he's ever going to be a big command guy, but that's something he still needs to tighten up. Even the control, he does need to tighten up too. And he still is not throwing that third pitch very much. It's still fastball slider. And we've seen it catch up in other outings this spring when he can't locate the fastball. So there's definitely things he still needs to work on, but I think as a depth option, having him in a depth role is a much better outcome than going into the season with him as, slotted into your rotation, because it gives him time to get ready, and there's less pressure on him. He's not coming into the season having to be that, surefire every fifth day starter. Now he can work on his stuff at the ATS, get locked in there, work out a few kinks with the pitching staff there and kind of get ready for when he eventually inevitably does come up for his, you know, 5-10, whatever starts he makes this year.
Yeah, and look, that's not to say that I don't think Tanner Houck. I think if anyone could handle that, Houck is on a short list of guys who have shown, he's shown the mentality that he can handle that. And I don't say that lightly, because some of the guys who've come up, who've become regulars or even stars, like Mookie Betts came up to the Red Sox and kind of stunk at first. He's one of the best players in baseball right now, right? Like, he's probably number two behind Trout, you know, and that,
yeah, it's like, so he's in that tier. He's in that tier with, like, Tatis, Soto, et cetera.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like you would expect guys to, you know, that to be good for anyone. That's not saying anything about Houck. I do think Houck is the type of guy who could handle coming up in the rotation. What's the problem with having, you know, every time everyone's trying to assemble this Uber team, and then when the Red Sox don't have a need to have Houck right out of the box in the rotation, people are like, why isn't he in the rotation? Because they got five guys. And guess what? If Martin Perez or Nick Pivetta isn't getting it done 2 months in, you kick Pivetta to the bullpen and you bring up Houck.
Exactly.
Like, what's the rush?
Exactly. Well, this is kind of the what's the rush thing probably is applicable to someone we'll talk a little about later, because he had a great end of camp in Jared Duran.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I mean, yeah. Well, let's do the rankings update first, and then we'll get into our season preview where we'll talk about Duran. That sound good?
Yeah, that works.
Okay. Well, so we did a small rankings update. So this is the time of year when we would typically be putting out our official season opening ranking. We would have been coming back from a trip to Fort Myers, seeing literally every minor leaguer in the system that's going to be stateside this year, other than the guys who weren't in the system yet, obviously getting drafted. But anyone who's in the system at the time, stateside, we would have seen. Invaluable source resource for us to get data, to compile information. This is going to be the second year in a row we're not going to get it. I did check because I'm going to be vaccinated in 3 weeks to see if I could get down to camp. It sounds like there's not going to be any media, so unfortunately not going to be able to do that. But this time of year, we're coming back from that, and we usually lock ourselves in the hotel room and we say no sushi for anyone until we've hashed out everything we've seen, and then we go home and we vote and we have our new rankings. Because minor league camp hasn't happened yet, we're going to delay that a month, and we just made some small tweaks this month based on what we saw in major league camp, based on reports we got from scouts who were at major league camp, our typical kind of compiling of information. And I guess we'll take it, I guess from the top makes the most sense, Ian. First guy, there were about four or five guys who moved, and a couple more guys who got grade changes. First guy who moved down was Brian Mata, simply an injury issue. Nothing else really to it, except for, I mean, when I hear UCL tear, I get worried. Yeah, I get it's quote slight, but I get worried for any pitcher, never mind one who, now Mata has had significant injuries in four
every
seasons
year.
Yeah, in the last 4 years that have cost him some amount of time. I'm beginning to get very worried about his ability to stick as a starter. If this turns into Tommy John, I think you have to give some thought to when he comes back to putting him right in the bullpen.
Agree.
Just because at the timeline you're looking at that point, because he's going to be, look, if he winds up getting cut, he's on the Jay Groom timeline. So we're talking
getting cut, you mean having surgery.
True. Sorry. If he's getting Tommy John surgery because they're rehabbing it, he's not coming back to the end of 2021. He's already on the 40 man. He'll have used, I guess, one option. Cause I guess next year, I don't know. Do you put him on the 60 day or do you just, I guess you just keep him in the minors so he doesn't get service time, but he'll have one option left in 2022. To me, if you don't put him in the bullpen, it's a very short leash. That said, we're not there yet, but you know, the injury concerns are enough that we moved him from number three to number six. And we dropped his grade his projection grade from a 5 to a 4.5. And I should say at this point, if you go to our website next to anyone in our top 20, all the way to the right, there's a grade. there's three numbers. There's one number by itself, and then there's two numbers in a scale. Those are on the 2080 scouting scale. The first number is a projection, and then the range is a floor and a realistic floor and a realistic ceiling. I say realistic because, yes, any player in theory could get hurt tomorrow and never go above what they are now and be a two. Yes, any player could somehow, not any player, but like, you know, look, they could, a pitcher could learn a pitch tomorrow that becomes their second best pitch. The example I always give is Jonathan Papelbon learning his splitter after he had made his major league debut from Curt Schilling, right? Or maybe it was the season he made his major league debut. You know, or a hitter just, you know, some like retools their swing and becomes something completely different. We're not projecting a guy to be able to completely retool his swing and become something different. Realistic floor, realistic ceiling. Mata, we had projected as a role five player. We've dropped him to a 45, a 4.5 projection. Again, that to me, that's the injuries. I don't know that there's really a whole lot else to say other than that, Ian.
Yeah, no, it just it drops him down from someone who of like, I kind of look at it that the group, the Mata, Hauk, Ward, Siebold group, who now are together, he had the most upside because his stuff was the best. His pure stuff was the best.
Yep.
The reliever risk was why he wasn't in the top two in that tier. Mm-hmm. But now with the injury, the reliever risk is heightened and there's the injury concerns, and that puts him back. Even though his stuff is better than these guys, it puts him in this group with question marks for various reasons.
Did you give any thought when we were discussing this to putting Hauk above Mata, Ian?
No, not yet.
Really?
I still...
I did.
The hard thing for me is I just... Talking to scouts around the game, there's not a lot of confidence that he's a starter.
Hmm.
And that's the thing that keeps holding me back is everything I've seen from him, and I've seen him a handful of times, is I've never projected him as a starter. And
you're just saying seen him in the minor leagues, not
yes,
his,
when, yes, correct. His games when I, last when, I year. When I've seen him in the minor leagues, yep. I've never thought he was a starter. And even after how well he did in talking to scouts, nothing changed for them, and it was just like, huh, that's interesting, and that's kind of where I'm at with that still.
Fair. Yeah, that group's going to be interesting. I'm interested to hear what reports, if any, we get from Worcester, because that's where Connor Siebold is clearly going to be. I'm looking forward to hearing where Thaddeus Ward goes. I presume he will be in Florida. In fact, I can't imagine he would be at the alt site. But I'm interested to hear reports on him. Based on the very little we saw in camp, I'm almost inclined to move Siebold above Ward, but that said, it's one inning and four innings. We're not moving guys based on that.
Right, exactly.
The next guy is just a grade change, Ian, is we bumped Nick York's projection grade from a 4 to a 4.5. If you wanted to argue it either way, I wouldn't fight you. He's on the cusp, I would say. It just seemed... It seemed like he, to me, Ian, that he belonged more in the group that's the pitchers you mentioned, Aldo Ramirez, Noah Song, Jay Groom, than he did with the guys below him who are, you know, Ronaldo Hernandez, Brian Arbonasi, you know, Jason Rosario, Matthew Lugo. It seemed like he belonged more in the former group than the latter. That said, I didn't feel terribly strongly, but he'd shown enough that he belonged in that first group for me.
Yeah, I agree. I do like him more than the guys below. So, and I do think it's kind of a like there's kind of a cutoff or like a drop off after him.
Right. I mean, if we did like Fangraphs does, where they have like pluses, maybe it would have been a 4+. But he would also be like Groom and Song might be 4+.
Right.
Right now, right. So it's like, you know, they might have been there. Next guy who moved was the big riser. Moving from, I think, 32 or 33, I think it was 33, to 16 was Garrett Whitlock, who in, granted, it's 9 innings in camp, was the best pitcher in camp.
Yeah, and I think we should talk a little bit about why he was at 33, because that was
different pitcher.
When guys are acquired from outside the organization, they're the toughest guys to rank for me because I obviously we talk to people around the game, we get reports on what they were with their other teams, and we kind of use that to inform of where we rank them. At the end of the day, it's still, you know, you don't know what's going to happen when they get into the developmental system, when they get working with the coaches, and also it's just like seeing a guy with your own eyes really helps inform your ranking too.
And I should add, Ian, don't forget, didn't play last year because no one played last year. Tommy John middle of the year before.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to get to, is the information we were going off, because we did get reports on him, was from like 2018 and early 2019.
Right.
So it was quite outdated at this point, and he showed up at camp with a fastball that was significantly harder than he showed pre-surgery.
Right. Our report says 90 to 93, topping out at 95. He sat like 93.
He was like 94 to 96, topped out at 97.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing was that we talked about, when I talked to scouts before, they all mentioned his breaking ball as his best secondary. His changeup was by far his best secondary. And I was talking to scouts down there who were throwing like 55s and 60s on it. And we heard before that it was more like a 45 pitch. And so he's just a completely different pitcher. And even this, I think we've talked about it internally, this might be too low, like, for what he could become. But it's just for now, this is where we're comfortable, because he's still rehabbing from Tommy John. He's going to be on an innings limit, and there's still question marks over whether he can stick as a starter, mainly because of health, and he just has to be ramped back up. Like, you know, he doesn't have the strength in his arm to be able to be a starter every day in and out. And so while he has the frame and a bunch of other – he checks a lot of boxes you look for in a starter, there's still those question marks, and that's kind of why he slotted where he did for now at number 16.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that was the highest spot we could really justifiably move him. I think that was about as aggressive as we could reasonably get for now. I, at first, was just thinking we'd move him up to, like, 21 or so. But the more we talked about it, the more I looked at it, and I'm just like, if you offered me Garrett Whitlock for Hudson Potts right now, I would take Whitlock and run, right? Like, I was just like, okay, yeah, like, I wouldn't even think twice about it. Why would we have Potts ahead of him? That has a potential to be, for the second year in a row, a heck of a Rule 5 pick. By the Red Sox and Heim Bloom, using a source that they haven't used in over a decade, really. So, you know, great find there. Whitlock enters with a projection of a 4 and a floor ceiling of 3 to 6. I should mention it, Ian, some who I missed. Connor Siebold, we did change his ceiling grade from a 5 to a 6 based on if he's the pitcher that we saw in the inning he threw in the major league game and reports we got from the B games and backfields. I think there's a 6 ceiling in there.
Yeah, he was strong. Yeah. He's definitely improved. His stuff was, again, his velocity was just up again.
Mm-hmm. The velocity was up. Change up looked devastating. Yeah, really liked what we saw out of him. So we made that tweak. Going into kind of the 20s range, two guys who moved up, again, based on what we saw out of them in camp. Edward Bizzardo moved up from 26 to 22, and Jonathan Araúz moved up from 25 to 23. Bizzardo, I'm kind of surprised, didn't get more of a look to break camp with the team, but I'm thinking it might just be that he's never played above double A and he didn't pitch at all last year.
Yeah, he was good. He threw 5 innings. You know, he
looked
walked
good.
2 guys, but struck out 4. Velocity was there. Breaking ball was as good as ever. Like, he's someone who is just this is the kind of what we've adjusted to, is just at the end of the day, he's still probably just a middle reliever, and that's why he's not in the top 20.
Yeah.
Cause the ceiling is like, I don't think it's a closer stuff, but I think it could be like a 7th, 8th inning guy.
Maybe. Yeah.
But it's most likely the most likely projection is still just a middle reliever. And as kind of the Red Sox have shown, you can find those guys. Teams just don't value them as much as they used to.
Right.
And that's why he's still outside the top 20, but we wanted to move him up to show that we recognize the, you know, that the stuff is improving, and it stayed that way.
Right, right. And if he goes to, you know, Worcester when the season starts and he's shoving and he's showing that stuff and he's, you know, the scouting matches tremendous stats, I think maybe he could push into the back of the top 20, but we'll have to see. We'll really have to see.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know that it's a potential future closer pedigree. As far as Araúz, you don't want to make too much out of spring training stats, but 308, 357, 590. He hit two home runs in camp when his previous season high. I mean, he hit like 8 home runs in the Carolina League in 2019, 11 for the year in 2019. So a little bit of pop out of him, looked pretty good. I think it was enough to look again. It was kind of the, if you were to say you could pick Jonathan Araúz or Nick Decker right now, it's like, yeah, I would take Araúz. No question. Can field, you know, 3 positions in the infield. That's intriguing to me. So he kind of nudged up a bit. I think those are all of, I thought there was another grade we tweaked. Maybe not.
I don't think so, because we're outside the top 20. So.
Yeah. And I think that was about it. The only other...
Jeremy Wieland entered the rankings at 60. That was
he re-entered. I think it was just kind of a, like, you know, he had fallen out as guys were acquired. I think we were just kind of looking at it like, Wieland probably should be in there.
Yeah, he's someone we wanted to keep ranked.
Yeah. So that happened as well. I could have sworn we had one more rankings thing. Anyway, all right, well, whatever. Yeah, so those are the kind of rankings updates we had. Well, like I said, we'll have a full re-rank at the end of the month of April based on reports out of camp. So, Ian, let's move on then to projecting what's going to happen in Boston this year. We'll kind of keep it focused a little bit on what we look at in terms of the prospects or even, you know, the recent graduates. You know, I think we know at this point where we're going to get out of Xander Bogaerts. I have no particular insight on what Alex Verdugo is going to do this year. I think JD Martinez will be better because he'll have video again. I think, I guess let me start here, Ian, before we get into individual guys. What generally do you think is the outlook for this team in the sense of what do you think is a realistic, let's start with projection and expectation, on a high end and on a low end for this team in 2021?
I think a realistic expectation is that they will be just over 500 and challenging for a wild card spot. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're good enough to challenge for the division. I think the Yankees and the Rays will be, I think the Yankees will probably win the division pretty comfortably. But I think that they should be able to challenge the Rays, the Blue Jays, to get, you know, 85 to 88 wins, maybe 82 to 85, 88 wins mm-hmm. in that range, and be a team that, you know, is competitive night in, night out. They're fun to watch. They play really hard. They steal some games maybe that they shouldn't have just by, you know, little things or, you know, having the more pitching depth than they did in the past, things like that can keep them in games. And I think if they can just be, you know, in the race come September, you know, with a shout, that's a successful season. Because at the end of the day, they haven't put all their chips on the table. They're not all in for this season. That's pretty clear. I think everyone knows that. And the idea is that you just want to see guys progress so that heading into next offseason, when I have a strong inkling, and I think we've already started to see it, like, who was it? Was it Jeff Passan or someone reported that the Red Sox will be in the market for one of the shortstops next offseason, potentially moving Bogaerts to a different position? Like, they're going to be in the market for one of the big free agents next offseason, I have a feeling. And I think next year is when you start saying, like, this is a team that will be challenging for the division again. But I think if they're in contention this year, that's a successful outcome.
I think that sounds right. And I think I am in complete agreement. This is a team that was built in the sense that they are trying to improve this roster, right? But it's not attempting to create a team that can contend for a World Series. And what I mean by that is this. There's no... I don't see a hole. Like, last year, it was just like, okay, there's holes on this team. But this year, it's like, okay, look at the bullpen, say. The back end is Adam Ottavino and Matt Barnes. I think if you were serious about contending this year, you get one more guy of that ilk, if not better, to anchor the bullpen. I think it doesn't make sense to spend for that this year. I think I look at the rotation. There are potentially five. That's potentially a very good major league rotation. It is also potentially a dumpster fire if Garrett Richards gets hurt and if Martin Perez, you know, pitches like, you know, Martin Perez of... You know, he's the number five starter, right? If you rely on him for more than that, it's yeah. If the Nick Pivetta experiment goes poorly, if Eovaldi turns into bad Eovaldi, if Eduardo Rodriguez can't stay on the field, it, on the other hand, it could be very good. If you look at the lineup, they are relying on at the start of the year, Kike Hernandez, Franchy Cordero, and Hunter Renfroe to all be everyday regular players. Right now, that's the way this roster is constructed. They're basically playing, if not literally every day, like you're not platooning Franchy Cordero right now. You'll sit him against like, you know, tough. He's a lefty, right? Tough lefties.
He is.
Yeah, you're going to sit him against tough lefties, but you're not going to sit him against like every lefty. he's playing against some lefties right now, because otherwise, I mean, what do you do? I guess you're playing Hernandez in the outfield and starting Arroyo at second, I guess. Marwin Gonzalez at second. You know, it's not, there are holes. Like I said, when the Red Sox got Hunter, when the Red Sox got Hunter Renfro, what did we say? If he's platooning or in a part-time role, this is a great sign. If he's playing every day, yeah. Right now, Hunter Renfro is playing every day. So to me, you know, it's not a strong team. It's a fine team. It's a, at least 500-ish team. It's not going to finish in last, I don't think, unless the wheels fall off. And even if the wheels fall off, they're much better equipped to handle that this year. But there's more needed to push it over the hump. I don't think you need to build an Uber team like the Red Sox did in 2018. But to me, it's, they're equipped to look at what they have on this roster and figure out who is going to be part of the next Red Sox core. Who are we going to keep around for 2022? Or are we going to ship guys off for parts? Are we going to sell on Garrett Richards, Martin Perez at midseason, build some more depth, and, you know, push more of that value into future seasons? It's a very modular, I might say, perhaps, team, and where they have a lot of options with what they can do with guys who are on the roster. Looking at potential in prospect impact, we've talked a lot about Tanner Houck already. I don't think there's really need to say a lot more about it. To me, on the pitching side, he's the guy who's most obviously set up to make an impact coming out of a prospect role. Does that sound about right to you?
Agree.
Other guys, I think on the pitching side, we've mentioned Connor Siebold. I don't see, you know, looking at the way this roster is constructed, Ian, I don't know how early you can get Connor Siebold a chance to start. Maybe mid-year, because you've got three guys right now on the Major League roster, and you know, Houck will be obviously the next guy up. I think it's going to take until mid-season until we see Connor Siebold. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that he's behind, as you said, he's behind Houck. And I think that they would go to someone like Brewer or Brazier. Obviously, is going to have to come back. They're going to have some other relievers that they could call up and move Matt Andrews to the rotation. That's why I think he's more like the eighth starter rather than, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, when you look at it, like the thing too is with a healthy Brazier, the bullpen is full of guys who don't have options save for like Josh Taylor, who I don't think is getting sent down unless he's truly terrible. So Phillips Valdez and Colton Brewer right now are your next guys up reliever wise. That said, I don't think it's going to take a lot for Edward Brizardo to take that next man up status in case of an injury. If he goes to the alternate site, if he goes to Worcester when their season starts, I guess it's the same place. If he's in Worcester when the season starts, I could easily see him coming up. I could say May and starting to make an impact as an up and down guy. And then potentially, you know, if Josh Taylor isn't working out and they send him down, for example, or if like the Austin Bryce experiment, look, Austin Bryce is on the team right now because you want to retain as much depth as possible. We've talked about this. I don't think Austin Bryce is in a position where there's no chance he could get DFA during the year. Not that you would want to do that, but if it's not working out, that could potentially be a Bizardo spot. I could see Bizardo coming up fairly quickly. Is there anyone else when you look at, like, say, the alt site roster, Ian, or perhaps even lower at, like, Portland, who you think could come up and make an impact this year on the pitching side?
I mean, I think that someone from the bullpen other than Bizardo is going to come up, whether it be, like, Steven Gonzalez, if they need a lefty, like, Reynel Espinal, Kevin McCarthy. Like, I think one of these under-the-radar relievers is going to matter.
We're going to get an email about someone who you didn't mention, so just go ahead
and
say it.
So... who didn't I mention?
Durbin Feltman.
Yeah, no.
Which I think that's a lot has to change for him to get into that hierarchy.
Yeah, exactly. But I think we're going to see like someone from that group is going to get up. Mm-hmm. But I think that's pretty much it from the pitching. I think they've positioned themselves strong enough that we don't have to go much deeper than that.
No. And then on the hitting side, I think just looking at potential prospects who could come up. There's not a ton there, except for at least on the 40 man. So initially, I don't see a lot happening. I think on the hitting side is we start to look at mid-year, June, July, August. I think that's when we see Jaren Duran. I'm going to go ahead and say, Ian, Jaren Duran, I think, comes up in July. I don't think he goes back down.
Yeah, I think if they call him up, it's going to be for good. And I was having this discussion. I kind of like tweeted about Duran yesterday and was responding to some tweets today about it. And I think that he has clear things he needs to work out. And I think that that is what's going to determine his timeline more so than need at the major league level, because they do have a need at the major league level. Like Hunter Renfroe would be better served in a platoon role. Mm-hmm. Franchi Cordero, we're not sure if he's an everyday player. Like a Cordero Renfro platoon with Duran playing center, Verdugo and right, and Kike Hernandez, you know, spelling Duran against really tough lefties, makes a lot more sense than the current outfield setup.
Yep.
If Duran proves he can play center field. And I think that's mm-hmm. the most important thing out of the gate, is he needs to show defensively that he can handle center field, and they would be comfortable, because Fenway Park is not an easy center field. You know, we've talked about that endlessly. He's getting thrown in the deep end there, and he struggled in center field down in Fort Myers several mm-hmm. times. You saw him misplay balls or almost misplay them. And that's something you just can't do that in a major league game. You know, it's one thing to do it in spring training, but you can't make those mistakes.
Yep.
And Red Sox, I mean, the Red Sox fans have been spoiled with Jackie Bradley out there. Like, he makes plays look easy that shouldn't be. And Duran is not that type of instinctual player. You know, he relies more on his speed to make up for when he gets a bad read. But at the major league level, you know, speed only can get you so far in center. You got to make that initial read. You're going to have to cover that ground. And so I think that's the number one thing he needs to work on. And I think the second thing is that he needs to refine his approach. You know, we saw it in spring training. He definitely sold out for power some. His contact rate was down. He struck out 38% of the time. It was like 19 strikeouts and 49 at bats. Mm-hmm. And his career rate is more in like the 21-22 range, 21-22%. So that's something that we're going to need to see. And I don't think that strikeout rate is kind of what it's going to end up being over a larger sample.
No.
But I do think that it's going to be higher a little bit, because I do think that's the trade-off you make. You know, if you're going to hit for power, the contact rate is probably going to go down a little bit. But he needs to get it back down to, you know, he'll get it back down to like the 25%, something more manageable. And he just needs mm-hmm. to make sure he's swinging at pitches that he can drive now, and not, you know, expanding the zone and getting himself out. And I think that's the other thing he kind of needs to refine a little bit at AAA, is that approach.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. I think, like I said, you know, I think it was Theo Epstein who said, you spend the first third of the season figuring out what you need or figuring out what you have. You spend the next third of the season trying to find where it is and find what you need and acquiring it. I'm butchering the quote, obviously, so we'll call it paraphrasing, and even that's probably a poor term to use. But then, you know, the final third, you've got your team together. I think this team is set up such that they spend the first third figuring out if some of these guys are everyday players, and then they're going to call guys up. I don't think that they're going to go out and acquire a whole lot unless this team really surprises us and everything clicks. I mentioned a kind of a ceiling for this team earlier, Ian. I could see if everything breaks perfectly, there's a 2013 in this team. I think the pieces are there for that. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think the pieces are there if everything breaks perfectly for that. And they've got a guy like Duran that can come up and supplement that. You know, can he come up and then add to the offense? Again, I think you can break him in on the back part of the offense. You could certainly move him up, though, if he's continuing to hit. So I think the opportunity is there for Jaren Duran to be this year's impact player from a prospect perspective. And I guess technically another prospect who's already there, Ian, is still rookie eligible, is Bobby Dalbec. We've talked a lot about him on this show. It's a show, I guess, this podcast. I don't know what we're going to see out of him. You talked last episode about a potential 300 strikeout, 40 home run season.
Yeah.
I think I feel comfortable saying that by the end of the year, he will not be hitting ninth.
No,
I think he's going to move up. But, you know, I feel comfortable that he will play a big part in the team this year. I think he's going to become a fan favorite because of the home runs.
Definitely.
I'm very interested to see how often he plays third base. Obviously, you want Rafi Devers playing every day, but I wonder if they're going to use Dalbec as the backup third baseman and put Marwin Gonzalez at first base when Devers needs a day off. We'll have to see. It'll be very interesting. And I also, I think, honestly, I hate to say it, the bigger thing to keep an eye on with Dahlbeck is what does Tristan Casas do once the minor league season gets started? Because if Tristan Casas is mashing, if he becomes the, no kidding, top 50, top 25 prospect in the game that I think is in him.
Yes.
Is he in Worcester by the end of the season? Mm-hmm. I don't think that's outside the realm of possibility. I think that would be aggressive. I don't think it's crazy. I think, nope. I mean, he might be in Portland to start the year. What do you do with a Bobby Dahlbeck? You've got Raffy Devers. You've got Bobby Dahlbeck. Do you just say, hey, JD Martinez isn't going to be around forever. We use the DH for one of those guys. I don't know. I don't know what you do. It'll be very interesting to see how that develops, that situation. I don't think you have to deal with it yet.
No, I think that's kind of like one of those, like, it will be a good problem to have if that comes up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, with Dahlbeck, he's a fascinating one to watch this year because, like, even at camp, he was electric. I mean, you saw him just hitting. I think he led the Grapefruit League in home runs. He had seven home runs. He also struck out, like, 40% of the time.
Right, right.
And that's the thing. It's all going to come down to the strikeout rate for me, you know. If his strikeout rate is around 30%, I think he can hit, like, 230, maybe 240 with, you know, 35 home runs. If it's closer to 40%, then this could get dangerous.
Yeah, at what point?
We could be looking, like, 200-ish around, like, Miguel Sano from last year. And that's the big question mark of what we don't know with him. Mm-hmm. And I'm very interested to see how he handles it second time go around. But it seems like I like what they're doing in the sense that he knows he's the starting first base or the everyday first baseman. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no one over his shoulder who's going to challenge him for at bats. You know, that's his job. And now it's on him to seize the moment. And I think, as you said, he's going to be, he'll definitely become fan favorite because everyone loves huge home runs.
Right.
And it's just going to be a matter of, you know, how does the hit tool go? And as the hit tool goes, his career will go. And that's what's the unknown and kind of what makes it exciting.
One thing that I'm going to be keeping an eye on, Ian, is the catching situation, which we almost got partially an answer recently. Did you see Christian Vasquez, by the way? The gnarly scar on his face from getting hit with the ball?
Yeah, I did.
Apparently, his sunglasses, like, saved his eye.
Yeah.
But at any rate, if Christian Vasquez or Kevin Plawecki goes on the IL, I honestly don't know who comes up.
Well, no, I think we do know. I think it's Chris Herrmann. They made that pretty clear, I thought.
Well, I guess they did, but he's not on the 40.
Yeah, but I think the situation, if Plawecki had to go on the COVID list, they would have just added another 40.
Obviously, but I mean, the COVID list is different because it's like 60-day DLing a guy, but
if someone doesn't go on the COVID list. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, if Christian Vasquez sprains his ankle running the bases, he's going to be out for 2 weeks.
That's the good news, though. If you're carrying 14 pitchers, you can DFA someone from there.
I guess. But are you DFAing Austin Bryce to call up Chris Herrmann for 2 weeks to be the backup?
No, you would, like, DFA Colton Brewer and
I guess. Yeah, I guess
Vasquez
that's true.
On the DL.
Colton Brewer's still there. That's true. That's a good point.
But I think we will probably get on to it when we talk about some of the alternate site, like, setup. But with the taxi squad coming back, the five-man taxi squad, I'm pretty confident he's going to be the taxi squad catcher.
Herrmann?
Like,
oh, no question.
All season. Or
they're going to alternate. I mean, that's what they did last year is they alternated among all of the guys who were down there.
But I think it makes more sense now to just kind of keep him on the taxi squad, especially because games are going to start eventually with the minor leagues. And if the taxi squad is still going, which I think it will be, then isn't it more valuable to have guys like Connor Wong and Ronaldo Hernandez, Johnny Pareda getting everyday at-bats versus Chris Herrmann?
Which, by the way, we should mention, Johnny Pareda has, as far as I know, not reported to the U.S. yet and is still having visa issues. It's been 2 months now. Is he coming? I don't know. I need to ask around about that, I guess. But right now we project both Hernandez and Wong to Portland just because the Worcester projected roster has Herrmann, Bandy, and Pareda. And I don't know how they're going to get that playing time split.
Well, do you know what you do? You in terms of for the, actually the taxi squad, they probably just swap Bandy and Herman back and forth.
Well, that's what I meant.
ATS is going down
because you've got to get them in games, right? Like they can't just be working out with the major league club.
Hernandez or the other catchers on the 40 will be involved in that.
Well, those are the only two catchers on the 40 is Wong and Hernandez, and that's kind of my point. Is I don't think those guys are ready yet. Maybe if you do only need a guy for 2 weeks, you call up Wong. I don't know, and you get him two starts, but.
I feel like Hernandez would be the one who would go, because wasn't he the Rays like third catcher last year?
He was with them a lot last year, but that said, how much of that was for development purposes, right? Versus what they were doing at the alt site. So
yeah, that's fair.
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I guess other guys who we might see, I'm interested to see when and if we see Jeter Downs at all this year. I could see him not coming up, Ian. If he does come up, I think it's much later in the year.
Yeah, it's a tough one because I think he had a good camp. You know, he was he didn't get as much playing time as I thought he would, honestly. But because did you know Jonathan Arauz had like 50 something at bats? Did you see that?
Oh, yeah, Jonathan Arauz played a lot.
He played a ton, and I was just surprised that Downs didn't get as much. But I thought Downs looked really comfortable against the pitching he was facing. You know, and I don't think his like player score rate was that high because it was mostly at the end of games. You know what I'm talking about, like the B-Rap.
Yeah, on Baseball Reference, we talked about it last time.
You know, he had 278, 409, 611, two home runs. You know, he looked good, and I just think that he's in a situation where they don't need to rush him. I think he's not Rule 5 eligible until, what is it, this offseason?
It's this offseason, yeah.
And just with Chavis and Arauz ahead of him on the depth chart, and then guys like, you know, Yairo Munoz, if they move him back to the infield, they have the infield depth where it'll probably be unlikely they're going to call him up. He's another one I think that when he comes up, it will be for good. And I don't think it will be until probably like next season.
I think if Downs does come up this year, it's kind of, you know, I think we say come up, he's going to come up for good. I am a fan of the call a guy up for a week so he sees what the majors are like move. It kind of is weird as far as service time and options and things like that. But I don't know that I see them doing that with Downs this year. I just don't know if he's close enough. And like you said, they have the infield depth. I think the question is if they need a shortstop after July for a short period, do you maybe give that shot to Downs instead of Arauz? I don't know. You know,
I think that one will depend on what they're looking like in Worcester, the performances down there.
Exactly. You know, it's quite possible that, you know, Arauz is raking and they say, yeah, great, come back up, kid. You've already got service time and Downs doesn't, and you're already on the 40. So the other thing we wanted to mention briefly, Ian, is impact recent graduates. A lot of times we, you know, guys graduate and we just not forget about them. We just don't talk about them as much because we want to talk about the new freshness as opposed to the guys in the majors who people can see on Nesson every day, unless it's spring training. And I think it's worth mentioning some guys who are up that are, you know, look, Rafael Devers is still 24, right? He's still technically a young graduate. I am very interested to see if and how Michael Chavis impacts this team this year. I don't see what they do with him. And, you know, we talk about 40-man log jams. I just wonder if at some point, I just don't know what they would get for him in a trade right now, but it seems pretty clear that the best thing for him would be a trade. I don't know what your thoughts are.
No, I Chavis is a tough one because, as you said, he's very repetitive with what they have. I think the way he comes up is Christian Arroyo is terrible. And they're just like, all right, we're going to put Chavis in that role.
Yep.
But he's someone who seems pretty confident in himself to be that he wants to be an everyday player. And I'm not sure how he would handle playing a bench role, playing like, you know, like 2 or 3 days a week in terms of just, would it let it impact his performance? Is that kind of the role he's best suited for? And I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I know his numbers were very good in spring training. Don't get me wrong. But talking to scouts, they're very confident in that once he's facing good pitching, there he's going to start getting carved up again, basically. Like the biggest takeaway is there are multiple people have said to me, like, he has not looked as good as the stat line would indicate in terms of their eyes. And that's why I don't know how valuable he would be for other teams. You know, and all it takes is one team, of course, but I'm just not sure what to do with him. It's a very strange position. And yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. And, you know, I would like to see him get another chance at the major league level. I'm just not sure it makes any sense with how the Red Sox are currently constructed, unless there's, you know, multiple injuries.
I think it would take, I mean, look at it this way. If Bobby Dalbec gets hurt, I think Chavis is probably your next guy up, right? Or do you play Marwin Gonzalez every day? I don't know. Maybe you do. But yeah, I could see that being how Chavis gets his PT. Like we said, there's plenty of depth at second. So I think it would have to be at first. But I just don't know. It's tough to see without multiple injuries how Chavis gets playing time.
I agree.
Anyone else, Ian, that you want to mention as potential, maybe a potential long shot to contribute at the major league level this year?
Well, I wanted to circle back to pitching because we completely glossed over that the Red Sox signed Hector Rondon.
Oh, that's right,
to a minor league deal.
Mm-hmm. Tyler Olson as well.
Yeah, so those, they clearly wanted to bulk up their kind of major league, ex-major league pitching depth, relief depth.
Mm-hmm. Relief depth, and definitely something they targeted.
I wouldn't count on those guys to make any impact, really. Rondon has not been good since 2018. I was looking at his numbers last night, talking to some scouts about him. And he's been horrific this spring, or he was horrific this spring for Philadelphia, and he was very bad last season. So I think it's fine as a flyer, but I just wouldn't count on those guys to be, you know, more of an impact, any sort of, you know, impact reliever or anything. In terms of wild card, I think that the place for me to look is in the outfield, and I think that the one is Michael Geddes.
Said it. Yep.
Yeah.
Like, he stood out to me.
He's just looked interesting during camp. And I don't even know what his numbers looks like. I'm looking them up for the first time. But his tools are just loud. And yeah, he hit 290, 436 OBP. Like,
what did he slug?
Like 500.
Okay.
Or 490-ish. And if you look at his game log, and this is the thing that's most interesting to me, is that he had 7 walks and 30 at-bats, and he had 10 strikeouts still in 37 plate appearances, which for him actually is not bad. That's like an improvement over what he normally is.
Right.
Because that was the big question with him coming from, I believe he was with San Diego.
Yeah, Padres, yep.
Is the hit tool, you know, he got a 30, he's at above a 30% strikeout rate and then like a 6% walk rate for the last couple of seasons. And down at spring training, you know, his walk rate was substantial and the strikeout rate was under 30%. So if that is something that carries over into the regular season with Worcester, given his raw power, you know, he's a guy who hit 31 home runs, had 14 steals and plays really good defense in right field because he's like a 70 arm. Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting guy, and so I'm interested to see kind of if that can carry over at the ATS and in Worcester, and kind of what the deal is there.
Yeah, I want to see him in the international. No, it's not the International League anymore. What is it? AAA East.
Yeah.
With Worcester, he mostly played right field in camp, so I think he's probably going to be the primary right fielder in Worcester next to Jaron Duran, and then left field might be where they rotate Munoz, and then Pueyo can spell, you know, all three positions. Although Pueyo, I don't think played any center this year. So maybe Geddes would be the one who plays center field when Duran sits. He's a guy that I've got my eye on, who I think could be like this year's Roberto Pettigini or Sandy Madeira breakout minor league free agent on the Worcester Red Sox.
I was thinking he was going to end up like, we're going to have like a Rusney Castillo season, and everyone's going to be like, oh, is he coming up anytime soon? We're like, I don't know. What's the deal there?
Yeah, a little
like
bit different.
Rusney. Yeah. But no. He's just an interesting one to me. And it's just that 8 walk to 10 strikeouts stood out because, you know, you look at his strikeout rate was like under, it was like 26%, 27%, which isn't great, but it's serviceable considering him. You know, where last season it was 31%, the year before it was 34%, the year before that it was 37%.
Yeah.
So if that, you know, trending down continues and the walk rate, I mean, it's a small sample size, but his walk rate was like almost 20%, which is not going to carry over. But if he can get it, you know, closer to 10% than 5%, then he becomes a lot more interesting.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Anything else, Ian, before we move on to listener emails?
Nope, I think that's it.
At about the hour mark. So let's...
Oh, you didn't make your prediction. Let's go on the record with our... Let's go with a record, where they finish in the division, and if they make the playoffs, how far, then...
Wow, okay.
So let's do... Yeah, record.
I'm going to put it in my intro.
Record, division, and then let's do best offensive player and best pitcher.
Record, division, OPOY... PPOY, that it?
Sure. I don't know. I'm just kind of making this up as I go.
Yeah, no, I know. I was just making sure I got everything you just said.
Okay. I'm assuming you're cutting this part out.
No.
Do you want to do like a sleeper or anything?
No, we could do a sleeper. Let's leave it in. Right. Let's let all people right. hear how the sausage is made.
I think it's fun, and yeah. I think it's a good right. exercise to go on the record with these things yeah. so that you can be held accountable.
So we can make fun of each other in the fall. I like it.
Well, that's more of it, but yes.
Ian, you start with record. How many? Just say wins.
Yeah, I'm not doing the record. So I was just going to say, I think they win 86 games.
I'll take the under. No, I'll... Are we doing Price is Right rules, closest without going over? No, I'm just kidding.
No,
I
don't know.
I was going to say 84. I mean, I feel weird being so close to yours. But
that's
like,
fine. But I think that's the sweet spot, is like the 80 to 80. 80,
I mean, in the division, I think we're probably going to both say, well, maybe not. Do you think fourth or third? I mean, it's fourth or third, right?
I think it's third. I don't think the Blue Jays are as good as people think.
Really?
Yeah. Their pitching gives me, there's a lot of question marks. And yeah.
I think we're both going to say third. Let's skip that. Offensive player of the year. Do you want me to go first? Because I made you go first before.
Yes.
Offensive player of the year for me. I'm going to say JD Martinez.
I like that. He heated up as spring training was going on. He kind of started to look more like himself by the end of camp.
Yep. Who you got?
I think I'm probably going to play it safe, and I will say I think it's probably Bogarts.
Okay.
I think he's the safe bet.
No, this is just straight offense, like offensive player of the year.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, you know what? I'm doing it. Give me Raffy, Big Scoops, or whatever his nickname is. I think last year was an aberration. It was just a weird year for him, and I think that he's due for just a monster campaign.
Who's your pitcher?
Pitcher? So this is a fun one.
It's a weird one, right?
Yeah.
There's no one obvious. It's not like there's a Chris Sale. I guess at some point there is going to be a Chris Sale.
So I actually
keep forgetting about him.
I think their best pitcher, I think it's going to be Matt Barnes. I think it's going to be a reliever.
All right.
I think in terms of just performance, if you made me pick a starter.
I mean, I'm not going to make you do anything.
Yeah, but if I had to pick a starter, I think E-Rod's coming back. I was very impressed with what he did at camp.
I was going to say Rodriguez. I mean,
long as he's healthy, I think he's the kind of the guy from that pitching staff.
Yeah, I think it's Rodriguez. I think it's definitely Rodriguez for me. Sleeper this year, or call it like maybe not sleeper, but it's like the what do they used to call it? The award that Nesson would give out, like the 10th man award or something.
Oh yeah. I think this is an easy one if you're calling it like the 10th man award or whatever. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I think it's, well, maybe it's not. I don't know. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, player who kind of.
I think you're going to say the same person I was going to say.
Who, Whitlock?
No, I was going to say Kike Hernandez.
Yeah, I could see Kike Hernandez too.
I think he's going to be really good this year.
I want to believe, but then you go look at his career line.
I know, it's so weird.
And it's like, oh, wait, he's actually not that good. Like, and I hate to put it that way, but it's like, that's the thing where when I look at this team and what it can be, like, I look at the lineup and I gloss over his name, like, yep, starting second baseman Kike Hernandez. He's never been a major league starter, ever.
Well, but I think it's wild, first off, that he's like the 9th most popular jersey.
Yeah, oh. Thank you. What?
Why? That was blew my mind when I saw that. I was like, okay.
Ahead of Michael Trout at 10.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
And I think you're kind of selling him short. Like, saying he's not a good player, he's put up over a win five of the last 6 years, and he was a 3-win player in 2018. Like,
he's Brock Holt. No, like two years ago.
He's way better than Brock Holt. No, he's way better than Brock Holt. 2018, he was 256, 336, 470 with 21 home runs.
Okay.
He was a 3-win player. Brock Holt has never been close to a 3-win player.
Sure, he's been a 3-win. Has he not been a 3-win player? Maybe
no. I'm going by Fangraphs, by the way.
As you both type.
On Fangraphs, Brock Holt's career high in WAR was 2.2 in 2014.
Okay, fair.
But I just think Hernandez is way more power. Like, Brock Holt's career high in slugging is 4.11.
Yeah, that's. I mean, he's. I mean, I'm being a little.
But my
I'm exaggerating. I'm being a little hyperbolic.
I think he's taken being the leadoff hitter very seriously, and I really like the quality of at-bats he's putting together in spring training.
Apparently, he's been watching video of John Means for weeks now.
I love it. That's what I mean. He's been waiting for this opportunity, and he thinks he's an everyday player. And yep. I think that him and Cora clearly have a really good relationship. I just think that there's a chance that he's going to kind of live up to what his expectations are, where he clearly thinks he's an everyday guy, and whereas I think there are a lot of people who are skeptical of that.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of hit me when, you know, you and I are in a fantasy league, and Hernandez was available for bid, and I was bidding on him, and I was bidding up the bidding, and I'm just like, wait, what am I doing? Like, there's no reason for me to be going this high for this guy. But I just, I want to buy in. I want to believe. I'm like Mulder in, or no, yeah. Yeah, Scully's Gillian Anderson. I'm like Mulder in the X-Files. I'm like, I want to believe in Kike Hernandez.
Exactly.
But we'll see. I don't know. For me, I have a feeling Whitlock is going to have some kind of impact. Like, I could see his season going completely. I could see him, like, sliding into the rotation mid-year. Yeah. I could see him working his way into, like, a late-inning role.
Well, that's the Whitlock is the wild card, I think, if I had to give one for the team, because as you said, his stuff, it looked like late-inning stuff. Like, in a one-inning burst, when he's pumping 95 to 97 with a plus changeup and, like, an average-ish breaking ball, and he's just dotting the corners with that heavy fastball because his extension is, I think, I want to say Red Sox stats, Chico's bail bonds, that thing, had said it was the seventh. I still look at that joke. But I think it said it was like the seventh highest extension out of like 500 qualified pitchers or something. And like talking to scouts, even before he had said that, like they've told me his extension numbers are elite.
You can see it.
And so he's just really hard to hit. And yeah, I think that's the wild card is what is his ultimate role? You know, as you said, is it because he has three pitches, he's got the starter's build, but at the same time, his stuff is so good and looks so good in shorter bursts. Is that kind of what he ultimately is best at? We shall see. But he's definitely the guy. I'm very interested to see how they use him. Yeah. I think at the start, though, it's going to be more of like a low leverage role. And they'll kind of work him in situations to build up his confidence. Because at the end of the day, he's coming off of not pitching last year, and he jumped. I think he was in Double A, was where he was in 2019.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. I'm trying to think if there's anything else we should go on record on, Ian.
Okay, which player not on the opening day roster will spend the most days in the major leagues this year?
Taking out Ryan Brazier.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Do you want to include Brazier?
Danny Santana doesn't count, and but I don't think he's the answer.
You think Danny Santana's the answer there?
No, I'm just taking him out. I'm taking Santana.
No, I know, Brazier. But I'm saying, like, if you weren't taking Danny Santana, because I'm a little skeptical just based on the injury.
I don't think it's him either. And I'm taking Houck out because he's opening the season, because I think he's the answer.
You're clearly baiting me to say Jaron Duran.
Oh, right? No. I was trying to bait you to say Eduard Pizarro, because that's who I think it might be.
Do you?
I think he's going to be good.
I think he's going to be good. I think, like I said last episode, and I really believe it, I think this roster is built to. It's not relying on Jaron Duran to come in and be that guy. Because in theory, they could call up like a Geddes or a Munoz too if those guys are raking, right? Like there's no reason it has to be Duran. I just think the opportunity is there for Duran to come in and just, you know, grab this thing by the horns and just take over a starting job as early as like June.
Yeah, no, there definitely is. I look at it, you know, with the way the team is currently constructed, once Brazier is up,
it's, you know, Bizardo, Brewer, and Valdez are likely the only relievers in the minors, like true relievers. Mm-hmm. And they're inevitably going to have more injuries or attrition because of performance there. So I think that one of those guys is going to have a chance to get up and stick. And I just think Bizardo's the best of those three.
Yeah, I could see it. I could see it. All right. Well, I said Duran and you said Bizardo.
Yep. And now we go to emails. Games.
Ian, Bizardo, Chris, Duran. Hashtag correct. Okay. Our emails again, podcast@soxprospects.com. We want to talk about what you want to hear about. First email is from the recently DFA'd Jeff Schneider. No, sorry. That's a different Schneider. That's John. Jeff asks, please use this. Oh, yeah. He sent two emails. Thank you for your excellent work on the site and the pod. A lot of attention has been paid to the significant depth the Red Sox have built on the roster and farm. I'm interested in your thoughts on another spin on the depth, Ian. Chaim Bloom has mentioned that this year will give the organization a chance to figure out which players constitute part of the core moving forward. There are a bunch of potential candidates that may grow into the existing core that may include considerable major controllable major leaguers with untapped potential. He lists Hunter Renfro, Franchi Cordero, and Nick Pivetta. Youth with some major league experience that may grow into something more, and Bobby Dalbec, Christian Arroyo, Jonathan Araúz, Tanner Houck. Those without major league experience but may get time in the bigs this year, Connor Siebold, Jaron Duran, Garrett Whitlock, Edward Bizardo, Jeter Downs, Tristan Casas, Hudson Potts, Brian Mata, although that's more likely 2022 now. I likely am missing some names here. What are your thoughts on the potential impact of this group and who may make the leap to part of the future core? Appreciate your thoughts, Jeff. I don't know what he means by this group because he listed like...
That's like 10 guys, right?
15 guys. But I think he's saying younger guys who may be part of the next core. And I think that, like, I inadvertently kind of made that point earlier. I think that they are giving some of these guys, you know, Hunter Renfro is under control for 3 years. Franchi Cordero is under control for, I think, something like that, two or three.
I think three.
Three. Pivetta is under control for three. I think that's exactly it. These guys are getting the opportunity to audition, or are they sticking around, or are they trade fodder? I think there's absolutely something to that, if that's what he's asking about. As far as who may make the leap, I don't really know. We have to wait and see what we get out of a Renfro, a Cordero, a Pivetta. You know, I don't know how much run Arroyo or Araúz or is going to get. I don't think you're going to see Casas this year. I think Casas is maybe next year at best. Hudson Potts is not this year. Hudson Potts is next year at best. Although, I guess maybe. I just don't see it.
Yeah.
You know, Downs is clearly part of the plans. Bizardo, I think, is clearly part of the plans as in a relief role. Whitlock has clearly put himself on the map as part of the plans. I think we've talked about it a lot. I just think it's a lot of wait and see, and I don't know if you've got anything to add.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just a wait and see. But I think that, as you said, the fact that you were able to list that many names is encouraging because in past years, it was just a very short list.
Yep. Or it was guys that were – it was like a team full of guys who you knew what you were getting. And this is what – I think this is really getting at what we talked about before. They had the guys who you knew what you were getting. This group of guys wasn't there. And that's why when guys were going to leave in free agency, you were running the car off the cliff because there was nothing there to come in behind him. It's not even a top prospect. It's a stopgap until the top prospect wasn't there. But anyway, thanks for the question. Next comes from Jake. Jake says, "Hi, guys. I am in love with the podcast and everything being done on the site. My question is about Gilberto Jimenez. I was very excited when they decided to bring him to camp to see how he looked after gaining all that muscle and to see his new approach after watching him in Lowell in 2019. Am I wrong in thinking he didn't seem to change all that much in regards to his swing? It didn't seem he wanted to hit the ball into the gaps, but instead keep using his speed to beat out throws in the infield. Thanks for all that you do, Jake M." A great email, Jake. We appreciate it. I did not feel differently than Jake, Ian. You saw much more of Jimenez than I did.
He's not wrong.
Huh?
He's not wrong either.
Yeah.
He didn't do what he was doing at Instructs. And okay. This is like talking to people who saw both Instructs and spring training this year. He reverted to his old Lowell swing. And I don't really know why. I wonder if it's maybe he was just overwhelmed facing guys who are like
8 years older than him.
Yeah.
And he's just trying to put the ball in play because he doesn't want to, you know, he didn't want to like strike out and look bad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know, but it's something I'm trying to get to the bottom of as well, because as the great email, like it was not what he was doing at camp last year. And that's what's confusing to me.
You know, it's funny because I noticed it, never said anything to you, I don't think. And I read this email and I was like, thank you for reminding me, Jake. I saw the same thing.
It was very interesting and it was perplexing. And I talked to some people down there with other teams and they had the same exact response. They were quite confused by it too.
Our next email was Mike being a wise guy. Our next email comes from William. And he says, good evening. I hope all is well with you and your family. And this is the draft question, Ian. It seems like the first three picks into the 2021 draft seem to be a lock already in Leiter, Rocker, and Lawler. Do you think that Marcelo Meyer would be the pick at number 4 overall, or can someone like Sam Bachman potentially go under slot to save money for the 39th pick? The reason I said Sam Bachman is because I think he can pop into the top 5 picks due to his recent performances. Best regards, William Biggs. Thanks for the email, William, and thank you for the opportunity to discuss a little bit of draft. Ian, before we answer the question, just to update folks on the top of the draft. It does seem to some degree, people are saying top 3. To me, it seems like a top 4.
Yeah. And yeah, I think that for now a lot can change because the draft, I keep forgetting this. The draft is in July.
Yeah. It's not so long.
Not the beginning of June. So we're still, you know, 3+ months away.
It's a lot of baseball to be played.
And that's the thing. But yeah, and especially with pitchers, like if one of these guys gets hurt, like obviously no one's wishing for that, but that changes things completely. And that's always the risk when you have, you know, multiple starting pitchers near the top of a draft.
Yeah. And Leiter's a draft eligible sophomore.
Yeah. And Leiter has been insane. I think he's thrown like 16 consecutive no-hit innings.
Yeah.
He threw a no-hitter one start, then a 7-inning no-hitter, a second start, like his last two starts. Do you know what his numbers are for the season?
Hit me. I need this.
36 innings pitched. He's allowed 7 hits, 1 earned run, 13 walks, 59 strikeouts.
Good grief.
He is. I mean, I've watched several of his starts.
Rocker hasn't been much worse.
No, Rocker is 37 innings, 16 hits, 12 walks, 53 strikeouts.
Yeah. Like, I mean,
it's.
I don't think either of them is going to be there.
It's obscene what those guys are doing.
Although all it takes is one underslot deal to push one of them down.
Well, and this is the wild card. And I think what he's talking about, Sam Bachman is interesting. He was someone actually, Fangraphs had a really nice kind of article or like blurb on him today.
We should back up, Ian, because we're saying the names. We should explain. I keep wanting to call Leiter Al, but that's his dad.
Jack
Leiter. And
Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker.
Kumar Rocker.
Pitchers.
Are both at Vanderbilt. Rocker's,
and Jordan Lawler is the kind of the number one guy, high school guy.
Shortstop.
He's a shortstop from Dallas area, mm-hmm. high school guy. And I already said that. And then Marcelo Meyer is the top California prep shortstop. And probably the number 2 high school guy on the board. And both Meyer and Lawler have been very good, obviously, with their high school stats. They're weird. but, yeah, I think that the interesting thing is going to be is someone going to go the Heston Kjerstad route and try to cut a deal under – or, you know, Carlos Correa. There's a long list of them. And try to cut an underslot deal in the first round. And I wouldn't – like rule the Red Sox out doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're going to do it, I don't think it would be for someone like Sam Bachman, because as great as he's been, he's probably a reliever.
And just watch video of him. Yeah, it's not like, pretty.
He's 6'1", he's 230. It's a weird delivery.
He's at Miami, Ohio.
Like, it's, you know, it's 70. It's like Fangraphs had a thing on him today, and they said it was like a 70 slider with a fastball. It's 96 to 100. But
you hear that and you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, and then his numbers are just stupid.
Yeah, his last outing was 3 innings, 9 strikeouts, like 41 pitches,
9 up, 9 down. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, because they're being really easy on him because of like some arm troubles he had or something.
He's had shoulder soreness. Yeah. So I just think he's more someone that. You look at, you know, late if they were picking later in the first round, you're picking the top 4, that's not the type of profile you cut an underslot deal with. You know, if you're picking the top 4, you cut an underslot deal with like either like one of the better height college hitters, or I think like a high school hitter or pitcher, and not a pitcher, high school hitter you really like.
Yeah, like if you love Matt McLean, the shortstop from UCLA.
Like another one like Sal Frelick, the guy at BC.
Yeah,
like
that's a better example.
If you
loved
him and, you know, you try to get him to sign for $4 million or whatever, and then you take someone else later.
And like when we say under slot, we're talking like you're saving $2 million.
Well, exactly. And, that gives you a chance to give two guys, a million over slot.
Right. I mean, it's the taking Hunter Dozier so you can take Sean Manaea.
Like the Orioles last year, they took Eston Kerstad in the first round, signed him for under slot. They went slot with their next two picks. They went like 100K over slot with their third round pick. And then in the fourth and fifth rounds, they gave each of them a million over slot.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the model. But I just think with the way this draft is forming, it seems those top four guys are kind of better.
Yeah.
And I think it was interesting to me that just it's those are guys the Red Sox could really use in terms of the system. High upside up the middle guys, every team needs those guys, and then starting pitching prospects. So I just think that unless something changes, those four seem pretty good fits, whoever's left from that group. And I think it puts the Red Sox in a good position in the sense that, they don't have to be the ones making the decision. Because I would not want to have to pick between those guys right now, like being at the top of the draft, whereas they can kind of see how the board falls to them and just go from there.
Yep. And our last question comes from Pat. Pat says, good evening, guys. I have an outside-the-box trade idea. Ready for this, Ann? Reacquire David Price. I know it sounds crazy, but hear me out. He's opening the season in the Dodgers bullpen, and I'm sure the Dodgers would love to move him. The Red Sox could send Martin Perez or Garrett Richards to even out the money. The Sox get a couple of good prospects back, and either this or next year's trade deadline turn around and trade him for more prospects. I guess he means Price. Thoughts? Thanks. In a word, no.
I just do not. I think the David Price Boston ship has sailed and is irreparably harmed to the point where I just can't see that happening.
No, and here's the thing with the Dodgers. Like, I read this. Yes, he's opening the year in their bullpen. I think it's in part because he was like sick during camp or something.
Yeah, he's only thrown like four innings this camp.
It's not that he's been demoted to the bullpen. He's opening the year in the bullpen because he hasn't ramped up yet, and he's going to be
also because they have seven starters that are better than like anyone the Red Sox has, but in their current rotation, if Rodriguez is injured, like I would take every single one of the Dodgers projected five starters over anyone in the Red Sox rotation, except for maybe a healthy Eduardo Rodriguez.
Even Urias?
Yeah. I would take Urias and Dustin May over Eovaldi. I would take Tony Gonsolin also older over Eovaldi. Like,
I don't know about over Eovaldi. I think Gonsolin, by want of being on the Dodgers, I think Gonsolin gets a little overrated personally.
I disagree. I think he is insanely good. But anyway,
I mean, he's good, and I would take him, and I would definitely put him in the rotation. But
they just have so much depth that I don't read too much into like.
I mean, the thing with the Dodgers is just like they operate on a different level monetarily. I don't think they care about the CBT, save for the third tier.
No, and I think with the Red Sox too, even setting out Richards, they're not in a position where they can take on that additional salary this year because they want to stay under 210.
Yeah, and this isn't the year to go over. Like, why go over if you're not trying to win the World Series this year? Seriously, like, what's the point? Save your 2 years. I mean, yes, we don't even know how next year's CBA is going to work. So why sell out for a year that you're not winning the World Series? I don't know. I mean, but yeah, anyways, I mean, it's a fair question and it's a good excuse to talk about Price being in the bullpen to start the year because I did want to mention that. So thanks for the email, Pat. But yeah, I don't see that happening. If the Dodgers did want to trade one of those guys, I would certainly inquire, but you're not getting prospects back to do it. So anyway, all right, again, thank you for all your emails. Ian, I think it's time to wrap up. So we want to make sure we give a thanks to Podcast Joe 2.0 for editing and producing the podcast. Thanks to our musical intro and outro brought to you by the Ludlow Thieves. Find them wherever you listen to music. Follow us on Twitter. Follow the site at Sox Prospects. Follow me at SP Chris Hatfield and follow Ian at Ian Kundall. That's IANCUNDALL. And of course, send us your emails. You can support us on patreon.com/Sox Prospects. Emails go to podcast@SoxProspects.com. For Ian, I'm Chris. Thank you all for listening. It's baseball season, folks. Get excited. We'll be back in your eardrum soon, hopefully with some prospecty stuff to talk about.
Let money come.